finished actually all three sections today. Now, who read all three? Did anyone read all three? Because we didn't give a definite assignment. How many did you read? None.
Two.
What was that?
Seven.
One.
Nothing.
Two.
Two. One. Other ones?
Yeah.
What a problem. Okay. Let's see. This verse describes Svabhava Janitaya Vapuchastra Dosha Napakritatva Miha Bhakta Janasi Pashet Gangam Vasham Nakulu Buddha Pena Pankar Brahma Javat Vamabhagatsati Niradamai. This verse describes the pure devotee. The last verse described treating three different types of devotees. The verse before that described making friendship, exchanging affection with the devotees. So, and the verse before that described how those things that are favorable for pure devotional service. So, as one of those things favorable for devotional service was Satovritte in Janasangha or Sangha Tyaga, that one should give up the association of non-devotees, that means that one should associate with devotees. And how to associate? Nadati pratigunati. Guyamakyati prasite. Bhunte bhojayate chaiva sadvidam priti lakshanam. That one engages in these six exchanges of love. And who and how should one exchange these exchanges of love? That's described in the next verse that we went over just for the last 3 days. That according to the quality of the devotee, one treats him differently. If one has just uttered Giri Tam Manasandriyata, one who has just uttered the name Krishnaiti, that person should be given respect within the mind. And one who is worshipping the deity and has taken initiation, he should be offered respectful obeisances. And one should try to get the association and shushushaya, always serve the devotees whose heart is devoid of the propensity to criticize others, and who is engaged in unalloyed vijnananya. His devotion is unalloyed and it is realized. Now, how to treat that pure devotee is further described in text 6, a very important verse. And Prabhupada, in the last section, gives some very powerful and strong words about criticizing an empowered, or instructing, or chastising in any way an empowered preacher, pure devotee. So the first section, well, first we'll read the verse. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. That's the point. He's not identifying with his body, nor should he be seen as if he was his body. Indeed, here's some examples. One should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. One shouldn't see this because he is not that. Because he is not identifying with his body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted because he is not his body. And his body, being fully engaged in Krishna's service, is pure. And it is spiritual as a gold-plated box is also gold. It is made of the material elements, but those material elements are Krishna's energy. So they are thoroughly spiritualized and can award spiritual advancement as if they were pure, solid spirit, like a gold box. So there's practically no difference between the gold-plated box and the gold box. So similarly, the defects in the body of the seeming defects aspects of the body of a pure devotee. They should not be at all recognized, and one should not think that the body of the devotee, a pure devotee, is polluted. And then the example, it is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges water does not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. So Prabhupada, in section A, which continues for just for 60 and 61 and the top of 62, he describes the position. First he defines what is Shuddha Bhakta, or pure devotion. And then he describes the position of one who has attained this Shuddha Bhakta. Shuddha Bhakta is the activity of the soul proper. This is the activity of the pure soul, uncontaminated by any of the material elements. So what does that person do, that soul do? He's engaged in the pure transcendental loving service of the Lord. And that is the liberated condition for the living entity. And then Prabhupada quotes Mamjiyo Hivacharina Bhakti Yogina Sevate. Now, Prabhupada then explains that Avyacharina Bhakti means unalloyed devotee. Sagunan Samatityaitan means that he transcends the modes of material nature. One who is always engaged in pure devotion without falling down, at every moment engaged in affectionately loving Krishna. He's above the three modes of material nature, practically by definition, and he is on the Brahma, or fully spiritual platform. So, by acting in the Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada explains, one's consciousness will be changed. So what is the consciousness changed from, and what is it changed to? Material consciousness is changed, is aimed towards enjoying matter, with the senses, with the mind and the intelligence, but basically with the senses. And spiritual consciousness is also aimed at enjoying, but it is aimed at giving Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, that enjoyment. Sometimes in the West, when that anti-cult movement was strong, they would say that the members are being brainwashed and exploited by someone at the top of the movement. They're collecting all day long and they're performing austerities and there's someone up there enjoying. And we agree with that. And that person up there enjoying is Krishna. So that is our business, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakta Uchate, to serve the master of the senses, Krishna with the senses. And that is the pure position of the living entity. And that famous verse which defines pure devotional service, Anya Vilasita Sunyam Janakamana Navita Anakulena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakta Uttama. This verse describes the condition of pure devotional service. Rather, it defines pure devotional service as acting simply for the pleasure of Krishna. And because the devotee is acting on this pure spiritual platform, he shouldn't be identified. Someone looking at him should not identify him as his body or his mind or even his intelligence. He should be identified as a Vaishnava. Now then Prabhupada explains in the bottom of 61 that the Kanista Adhikari cannot make the distinction between the Prakriti Bhakta, cannot make the distinction between an advanced devotee and a neophyte devotee. He only sees the deity. Deity is God. He doesn't understand anything but that. But the Madhyam Bhakta, he should distinguish between the non-devotee and the devotee, as well as between the devotee and the Lord, and he treats the Supreme Lord, the devotee and the non-devotee, in different ways. And no matter how one treats the devotee, one should not at all criticize his bodily defects. One should not criticize a pure devotee's activities. One should basically just give respect to a pure devotee. And that's, and it's summed up by explaining in the last sentence of this section that a devotee is not considered an ordinary being. especially the advanced devotee. So devotees are not ordinary. So this section has defined what is pure devotional service and how should those acting in the realm of pure devotional service, how they should be treated. Any questions about that? Okay, quite simple. Then, in the next section, Prabhupada explains that this pure devotee, one should be considered or not considered a pure devotee simply by his activities and his consciousness, even more than his activities, his consciousness, rather than by birth. A very important point, especially in India, where birth is taken as very important. Now, birth is important. It is not that birth isn't important. Because according to one's birth, or one takes his birth according to his karma. And according to one's karma, one acts in a particular way. One acts gentle, one acts rough, one acts in a simple, pure way, or one acts in a very contaminated, sinful way. This has to do very much with one's birth. And also, not only does it have to do with one's birth, but one's conditions and one's association after one's birth also affect one's qualities. And one's situation and who one associates with after one's birth is very much dictated by one's birth. If one is born in an aristocratic family, he'll associate with aristocrats. If one is born in a very low class, dirty, slummy area where people are stealing and taking drugs and talking foul language and engaging in illicit activities, then naturally that birth predicates a tendency in him to actually engage in these abominable activities and be practically driven to hell. So it's not that one's birth isn't important, but the point is that ultimately the issue is one's qualities, not one's birth. And that ultimately is how someone should be judged, by his qualities, not by his birth. So, for example, if someone is born in this low-class area and somehow or another becomes a fragrant rose in the middle of these weeds, should he be accepted as a rose or a weed? Certainly as a rose. And the example is Prahlad Maharaj. He was born in a family of asuras, springing from the very dynasty of that arch asura demon, Hiranyakashipu himself. But Prahlad was a devotee. So although it says in the Bhagavad Gita of asuras, daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad, practically, Prahlad certainly isn't a demon, although he's born in the demon family. He's the best of devotees. And on the other hand, someone born in a good family, but has low-class, horrendous qualities, what is he? He's low-class and horrendous. And Prabhupada gives the example that the son of a judge on the high court bench, it doesn't make him a judge by definition, but it gives him an opportunity to become a judge. But he's not a judge just by his birth, but he has a good chance. But ultimately, the final point is, and the final analysis is, that although the body will dictate tendencies, and the association that springs from the body determines tendencies, ultimately it's the qualities that the person imbibes that we judge him by. So Prabhupada explains this in regard to the Goswamis. There was previously, and it still exists to some degree now, that Goswami births is considered very pious. Because naturally if one is born in the family of the Goswamis, one is connected to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord the famous Vamsas or families, Nityananda Vamsa, and all, there's the Radharaman family, there are 45 families, Goswami families in the Radharaman dynasty at the present, and then there's the Govindaji Goswamis, but the Nityananda Vamsa Goswamis are the most populace. There's more of them than anything else. And then there's the family descendants of Advaita Gosai and Gopal Bhatta's disciples of the Radha Ramana Goswami, something like that. So these people tend to think that their birthright is to be the spiritual masters of everyone else. This is a tendency. Now it is a very pious birth, but one has to come out with pious qualities for it to be acceptable. And certainly the ruling is not that one must be in one of these families to preach Krishna consciousness or be a spiritual master in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj fought this vigorously. At the time of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the Nityananda Vamsas were very, very powerful. The Jati Gosai, the caste Goswamis, they were very powerful. And because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta preached vigorously that it is one's qualifications, Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Sudra Kene Nai Ye Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hai, that regardless of one's birth, whether one is a Sudra, a Brahmin or what, if one knows the science of Krishna, he is Guru. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described in his commentary to the of the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, that one who is a Vaishnava, he can perform all the activities of a Brahmana. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati preached vigorously, and because he preached vigorously about that, there was even a plot to kill him. They came to the police in Namadweep and said, we are planning to do something to Saraswati Thakur, and you please turn the other way. And don't follow us on this. 25,000 rupees. In those days, that was a lot, too. It was lakhs and lakhs. And the police said, it's not that we don't take bribes, but for a saintly person, a sadhu, we cannot take part in anything like this. And they came and warned Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, beware, this is the situation. They're trying to do this, that, to you. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told this personally to Prabhupada this incident. And it came to one time that when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta did the Vrindavan Parikram with his hundreds and hundreds of followers, because there were people of all castes there, the Vrindavan temples except for Radharaman closed down. Because actually, the lineage of some of the Radharaman Goswamis, some of them they would help Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. This Padmanabha Goswami, his great grandfather, he preached. Well, he was older and Bhakti Siddhanta was younger. They preached together, so there's a lineage of helping, and they kept their temple open, actually. But it was a great fight, as Prabhupada described it. And in the end, the true philosophy of Mahaprabhu came out victorious. And therefore, there's not so much trouble on this point nowadays. So it is according to, one is a Goswami according to one's qualification, that one is the master of his senses. One shouldn't think, Prabhupada said, oh, here is an American Goswami, and discriminate against him. Nor should he think, here is a Nityananda Vamsa Goswami. One is a Goswami, or one isn't a Goswami. So one is not an American Goswami, or a South African Goswami, any more than one is an American spirit soul, or a black spirit soul, or Australian, or whatever. The spirit soul is beyond these bodily designations. And then Prabhupada puts in the last word on this, in the last paragraph in this section, that a devotee who has attained the title of Goswami but is not born of a Brahmana father or a Goswami in the family of Nityananda or Advaita Prabhu should not be artificially puffed up by thinking that he has become a Goswami. He should always remember that as soon as he becomes materially puffed up, he immediately falls down. The Krishna consciousness movement is a transcendental science and there is no room for jealousy. This movement is meant for the Paramhansas, who are completely free from all jealousy, paramam yamatsaranam satam, one should not be jealous. Whether he is born in a family of Goswamis or has a title of Goswami awarded to him. As soon as anyone becomes envious, he falls from the platform of Paramhamsa. So, although one who has earned the title of Goswami by his renunciation, he is a bona fide, legitimate sannyasi, but yet he should not be proud, or envious, or jealous. He should be humble, knowing that he's attained this position simply by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Guru Parampara. Any questions about this section too? So the first section had to do with the qualifications of a pure devotee and how one should he's beyond any defects. And the second is that if one is instated in that position, and there's nothing again to do with his birth. So if one is, it's not by birth, some official title, but it's by one's qualification. A similar point. Any questions about that? Then the third section has to do with offending. And here comes the heavy stuff. Offending pure Vaishnavas. So this Prabhupada describes, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described, as Hati Mata. Hati Mata means the mad elephant offense. So when the mad and drunken elephant enters into the tender garden and sees all the creepers with his hard legs and his strong trunk, he uproots everything and causes incredible damage and plays havoc until there is a complete devastation. Similarly, if one offends a pure devotee on this, especially on this level, then his devotional kripa is devastated. And this is a most lamentable occasion. Now, every devotee should be ready to take instructions from a superior Vaishnava and ready to help an inferior Vaishnava in all respects. This has already been described. One is superior or inferior according to his spiritual development in Krishna consciousness. One is forbidden to observe the activities of a pure Vaishnava from a material point of view. For the neophyte especially, considering a pure devotee from a material point of view is very injurious. One should therefore avoid observing a pure devotee externally, but should try to see the internal features and understand how he is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So one should generally give the benefit of the doubt also. And also, not only shouldn't there be caste Goswamis, you know, automatically one is advanced, but it's also the same is true of there's a reaction that takes place in our movement when previously people thought that the disciples of Srila Prabhupada weren't getting enough respect, and then the reaction is that everyone who's Prabhupada's disciple should be given respect, but no one could be, it was even said that someone shouldn't be president of this temple here because he's not a Prabhupada disciple. These things are actually completely superficial, external, and ridiculous. That if someone's advanced, what's the difference? And if one's not advanced, what's the difference? It's a symptom of stupidity and superficiality. Of course, if someone's a Prabhupada, even if someone's older than you, Hare Krishna, anything I could do for you, natural etiquette. But we're not talking about just a little bit of plain common sense etiquette. We're talking about, oh, you have to accept someone as very advanced, or you can't accept someone as advanced and he's not qualified to take a position because of his initiation. That creates a different kind of caste consciousness, which is completely artificial. Like I have an aversion to this term, like that people say, are you a Prabhupada disciple? For some reason I have such an aversion to that. Because I mean, at least I don't think of I am a Prabhupada disciple, I'm a disciple of Prabhupada. That more accurately puts the position. It's not like one noun, a Prabhupada disciple. Like, are you a member of this club? this is silly stuff. But of course, some etiquette should be there, because one should respect senior people. This is etiquette. But it's a reaction also, because in the Zonal Acharya days, you know, everyone was, regardless even if people were advanced, you know, if you weren't, everyone's only way to serve Prabhupada was through serving one of your guru godbrothers, your guru GBC, MVT, godbrothers and things like that. So the reaction is something else, but neither of them is the philosophy accurate.
It talks about knowing the internal characteristics, internal features, to understand pure devotee. It almost seems like you have to be a pure devotee to know one.
That's explained later. Yes. Yeah, so you can't really see the internal character. And there's a danger also of seeing the internal characteristics of a person. But the point is, one shouldn't just observe the pure devotee externally. But also, Prabhupada describes a little further, understand how he is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In this way, one can avoid seeing the pure devotee from a material point of view. So this is the idea. Externally means just his body. And just understand how he's serving Krishna. It's sort of a simple statement. Don't judge him by, you know, how his body looks, or if he's cool, or this or that. You see, one has to see his sincerity and how he's serving Krishna with devotion. One should be generous. Like a Vaishnava will tend to offer others respect, a materialist, even more respect than he deserves. He doesn't begrudge that, but a materialist is, why should I respect him?
Yeah, one should not see that pure devotee in a sensual side. But if you are in our situation, we are on the field of vision, so you just see that in the field side, and the exterior side, you don't see the internal side because of it. That's such an interesting. So at the same time, this pure devotee, you know, can be engaged in activities that he cannot understand. You know, it seems they can even go against the rules. So it seems that unless we have the guidance of someone who's really advanced and can tell about that person, we by our own way cannot really analyze very much the behavior of the very exalted devotee.
Right. But if Krishna, there's so many things that can be said about this. The main point is one should, as the verse says, one shouldn't judge a pure devotee's position by his body. That's actually the main point, externally. But one should see how that he's serving Krishna sincerely. The Prabhupada will speak about this in more detail and more directly very soon. But that's the main point. But also, one shouldn't be foolish and think, oh, he's a pure devotee, therefore he can be engaging in illicit activities and he can be enjoying his senses. We shouldn't be fooled like that either. Don't be stupid. Don't be fourth class, fifth class, sixth class intelligent. Don't be like that. But the basic principle of a Vaishnava is that he's kind in his judgments. And he's mostly judging himself. He's not spending his time just calculating where everyone else is so he can show himself better. Mostly he's seeing how fallen he is and seeing how good everyone else is. But when it comes to, this is the philosophy, but when it comes to practical, if we see someone that's clearly deviating, we should not be fools. This is the practical application is somewhat different than the theoretical. It's our duty to tell what we know to someone who can help the situation.
I have a comment that about someone that someone shouldn't be fat. Shouldn't be on the fat side of the that was a little tubby. You might think, well, if you do it that way, then you kind of judge in that way. and might be offensive. How should you view it?
It's a little tubby?
Quite a lot tubby.
You mean he's a real fat fellow? How should you look at him?
Yeah.
Not with longing eyes to eat him. I certainly shouldn't look at him like that. What do you mean, how should we look at him? That's meant for us to look at ourselves. That we shouldn't be... We shouldn't overeat like that. And that's especially Prabhupada in that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the purport. It says that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur especially didn't want to see his sannyas disciples like that. But don't worry so much about that. One should also at least see the service that the person is doing and let his friends deal with him and his associates and the people that he trusts. Why? What do you think? Because a person in a lesser position can't really very easily, unless he's really, really expert, knows the art of subtle speech. I think our two friends over there, they have something in their mind that they're not revealing to us. At least one of them does. Anyway, something is better to keep in one's mind, cover one's mouth. What can one do? One should make sure oneself doesn't get... Either that or you bring him to Vrindavan and let him eat the temple prasadam. Let him solve the problem very quickly. There's not an ounce of fat in this room, more or less.
Should you think, well, maybe that's just
their
physical makeup?
Yeah. Why should you bother thinking about it very much? What is the necessity for you to think about it? If it's your service to think about it, of course one can't help fault finding. You know, it's the nature of the conditioned soul. But some people's service is to watch out for other people. But there's very few people whose service is that. Like a manager has to see, you know, this isn't getting done, this isn't getting done, this isn't getting done. But the regular devotees shouldn't be fault-finding like that. If it's your service, you do it. So it's your service to make sure that there's no fat people. Actually, if there's a job opening,
so
anyone else have any realizations about this?
What should they do when they see a shrimp little Indian boy and he's eating like about 7 times as much as his stomach can handle?
What should you do?
Yeah. Should I just keep on piling it up there? Or just
Bengalis eat a lot of rice. I mean, you can't believe it, but they don't usually get fat either. They eat, you know, 5-10 times as much. Right, but so what's your business, how much he eats?
Well, I just found it quite
astonishing is one thing, but doing anything about it is another thing. You get Guinness's Book of Records, you know. In one meal he's eaten, you know, 7 inches by 25 inches tall. Well, why do we care? That's called envy. I can't eat that much, why he should eat so much? That's envy. So we shouldn't be envious. We should mostly try to become Krishna conscious ourselves and help others. Krishna puts other people who we can influence. What would happen if you went to that person and said, Prabhu, do you know how much you're eating? You shouldn't be eating that much. What would happen?
He'll just laugh me off.
If you're lucky, he'll just laugh you off. But the point is, one shouldn't worry so much about others as one should worry about himself. One know what his own duty is. And not worry about what others. See, our problem is generally that we know exactly how everyone else should act, and we're making sure that everyone else doesn't act properly. At least we're writing down in our book or in our mind how everyone else doesn't act properly. And we neglect to see how we're not acting properly. There's that famous story of the Brahmin who was living opposite the prostitute. And if you know that story, so they put the rocks there every time one of our clients went in, and he would stand there with another rock, you know, just see how fallen he was. And he was always thinking about how corrupt this prostitute was, and the prostitute was thinking, oh, how fallen I am, what an unfortunate position I'm in. And she was elevated because she was lamenting, and he was degraded because in his next birth because he was always meditating. So we shouldn't meditate on the faults of others. If we have to meditate on faults, we should meditate on our own faults. Better we should see the good in others. Look for the good. As we would wish, you know, have you been around people who just see all your faults and always continuously telling you your faults?
Yeah.
How does it make you feel?
Yeah,
you want to move out fast and you never want to see them again. It doesn't encourage you at all to remove the fault. So that's, you're not the only one who feels like that. But when someone sees mostly good in us and says, and we know that he sees mostly good and likes us, and then when he shows us a fault, then we take it seriously to try to remove it. This is the art of teaching. Bring all fat people to Vrindavan.
Love
them. Huh?
Love fat people.
The pigs.
Not to say the pigs. Well,
not very many of them in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Now, those who think that Krishna consciousness is limited, and what happens if there is a fat person who's pure, completely pure, and somehow by Krishna's arrangement to keep him humble, or whatever, he's been awarded a fattish body. And then if you say, Prabhu, how fat you are, aren't you ashamed? Look at that body, you pig. You hippo. So this is, and if he gets, you might offend him, and then it's very bad. So Prabhupada then, those who think that Krishna consciousness is limited to a certain section of people, a certain section of devotees, or a certain tract of land, are generally prone to see the external features of the devotee. Such neophytes, unable to appreciate the exalted service of the advanced devotee, tried to bring the Mahabhagavat to their platform. We experience such difficulty in propagating this Krishna consciousness all over the world. Unfortunately, we are surrounded by neophyte godbrothers who do not appreciate the extraordinary activities of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. They simply try to bring us to their platform, and they try to criticize us in every respect. We very much regret their naive activities and poor fund of knowledge. An empowered person who is actually engaged in the confidential service of the Lord should not be treated as an ordinary human being. For it is stated that unless one is empowered by Krishna, one cannot spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So beware of offending an empowered devotee. One can see, actually there was trouble with one of Prabhupada's godbrothers who was, his place was right across the street over there, this Institute for Oriental Philosophy Research, like that. And it's completely devastated. You can see it as it's a non-devotee college with giggly girls going in it, and that's all. And it's completely devastated. And you can get an idea of the power of Vaishnava Apparat by taking a walk over there. I used to take my writing class there and just look around at the devastation. There's still a Murti of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur by the building over there.
It just seems like only someone Prabhupada could write something like this.
I don't
see anyone else could come close to writing such heavy statements against his godbrothers, against anyone who criticizes. And indirectly, he's pointing himself out as the pure devotee who spread the movement all over the world.
What to do, it's true. And even his godbrothers, they couldn't glorify him in his presence while he was on the planet, but when he left, they admitted it. It's so obvious that he has done so much and no one did as much as him, and they glorify him. Even the ones who are critical, generally, this is what happens. When one thus criticizes a pure devotee, he commits an offense, Vaishnava Aparadha, that is very obstructive and dangerous for those who desire to advance in Krishna consciousness. A person cannot derive any spiritual benefit when he offends the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Everyone should therefore be very careful not to be jealous of an empowered Vaishnava or Shuddha Vaishnava. It is also an offense to consider an empowered Vaishnava an object of disciplinary action. It is offensive to try to give him advice or correct him, so these things must have happened. It is offensive, his godbrothers once cornered Prabhupada in Mayapur, and they were yelling and telling him that, why you have taken the name Prabhupada. I think he's probably referring to that. One can distinguish between a neophyte Vaishnava and advanced Vaishnava by their activities. The advanced Vaishnava is always situated as the spiritual master, and the neophyte is always considered his disciple. The spiritual master must not be subject to the advice of a disciple, nor should a spiritual master be obliged to take instructions from those who are not his disciples. This is the sum and substance of Srila Rupa Goswami's advice in the sixth verse. Very heavy stuff. Very heavy stuff. At the end, in Prabhupada's last days, he would call his godbrothers and he apologized to them and said, if I have committed any offense because of preaching, please forgive me. Sometimes we have to say strong words of preaching. Please forgive me. And Narayan Maharaj responded by saying, anyone who thinks you have offended them, that in itself is an offense. And Prabhupada accepted. But he was in a very humble mood. So this is instructions to make us somewhat afraid, basically, for our benefit. These things are put in there to make us afraid of being critical of a preacher. Because someone rightly pointed out that you can't tell who's empowered, who's not empowered, who's a pure Vaishnava, who's not a pure Vaishnava, because it's internal. So what is the lesson we should learn from that? Well, we shouldn't offend people, and we shouldn't be critical, because we might, by chance, be offending a pure Vaishnava, and our spiritual life will be devastated. So, this is the idea.
Is the example of the stepmother, the stepmother, the other mother, Prabhu Maharaj?
Yeah.
Because Prabhupada, when she died, they were looking for her son in the forest, and she died in the forest.
Right.
Prabhupada comes. She got the result of offending a person who would become a pure Vaishnava.
Yeah.
It's because you would become a pure Vaishnava, the offense that took place.
Yeah. So we should avoid criticizing, you know, especially with enmity and jealousy. This is, one could feel the wounds in his heart from how we've done this. We should avoid this. It hurts. It doesn't help. So tomorrow, read through 6, although we covered it quite thoroughly, and then try to do all of 7. Although I have 2 days planned for 7. But we'll try to read the first 2 sections. We'll see how we do. Any questions about anything?
And today's bhakti could be tomorrow's pure devotee. And today's newcomer. And if you offend him, then you say that seed of offense will fructify later when he becomes a pure devotee. Oh.
Why, the point is that even in that one is that we shouldn't offend people, even if they don't seem to be very pure now. We should be gentlemanly in our dealings and be considerate of others and be soft hearted. See, that even frightens one. Okay, I better, even though I'm thinking, that, okay, I better not offend him. I don't know if he's a pure devotee. Here's another one who's he's a newcomer. He's not definitely not a pure devotee, so I can offend him. But no, then we take out the story of Dhruva Maharaj. And we say, oh, I better not even offend him. So all our options of who we can offend are being removed. And all we can offend is we can just criticize ourselves all day long, but we don't want to do that. We should be gentle and encouraging and helping each other.